Welcome to the STFM podcast, brought to you by the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine. In this podcast, we speak to leaders in academic family medicine about a variety of leadership topics. And now your host, Dr. Saria Carter-Sikosia.
Well, our STFM podcast listeners are in for a treat today. We have Dr. Grace Shee with us and Dr. Claire Thompson. And they are going to share with us some exciting and effective ways to manage your time. I don't think there's a single soul out there more that isn't overwhelmed from time to time with the data that's in front of you, managing your schedule, and staying on top of what's ahead of you. So without further ado, I'm going to ask them to introduce themselves. Dr. Grace Shee, tell us a little bit about yourself and what inspires you about family medicine.
Thank you, Saria. I'm really excited to be here. So I am associate professor at University of Washington in the Department of Family Medicine, and I'm also director of our WAMI Family Medicine Residency Network. There's so many things that inspire me about family medicine, but when I am really frustrated with patient care or I've been thinking too long about our healthcare system, what brings me hope and inspiration is thinking about where family medicine as a specialty really came from. And by that, I mean family medicine's historical roots as counterculture and born from a place of justice, a place that had deep concern for the dysfunction and fragmentation of our healthcare system. And I just think about this spirit and the drive of family medicine and of my colleagues. And it reminds me of the community I've been blessed to be a part of. And it reminds me to keep fighting and looking forward. And that's where I really get inspired about family medicine.
Oh, I love that. I love that. We are a community. It, just some of the words that you use, community and the roots of justice. I can't think of a time that is more timely when you talk about justice. That's why we are who we are as family physicians. Now let's jump over to Dr. Claire Thompson. Tell us a little about you. We heard about some inspiration and family medicine, who we are. What makes you hopeful about our future of family medicine?
Hey, Saria. Yeah, really excited to be here. I'm Claire Thompson. I am a core faculty member at the Swedish First Hill Family Medicine Residency in Seattle, Washington. I'm also the OB Fellowship Director here. And it's a really fun time of year for you to ask me that question because we have our new R1s who arrived last week to start orientation. We have our R3s graduating this weekend, and then I have my new fellows starting in just a couple of weeks. And I think, you know, getting to know all of these individuals and, you know, seeing what they're passionate about. I mean, let's be honest, yeah, there's a lot to be discouraged about for the future of medicine in general right now. You know, the control fee for service ship, all of the restrictions on abortion care and gender affirming care. But when I think about all of these individuals who are just starting their family medicine journey and what they're passionate about. And then also like the R3s that we're sending out into the world to practice on their own and what they're going to do for their communities. I do feel really hopeful.
Here's to new journeys. This really is an important and exciting time in our cycle of residency and education. And so I'm glad you hit on that. And it's also a challenging time for us, not only for our specialty, for healthcare overall, for the reasons that you've already mentioned. So also knowing that it's also a very hectic time. As we start these new journeys, we will be challenged with time management, how we balance, how we coordinate, prioritize our duties. So that being said, let's start with you, Claire. If we were on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you today? Let's keep it real. Where are you? 10 being the most balanced you've ever been in your life, and 1 being your most miserable, your most overwhelmed, and not even sure where to start.
Yeah, great. Great question. I think I'm probably at a 3 or a 4 today because just as you brought up the flip side of all of the inspiration that comes with like new and graduating residents and fellows is that there's just a lot happening at work right now. There's lots of orientation sessions and events and graduation events. And so most of like my flexible time in the week is taken up by all of those things. And then I think, you know, we bring up kind of like work-life balance and you know, what does that term really mean, that there's also a lot going on at home. We're like leaving for vacation for a few days and we're leaving midweek. And so all of my free time at home is like wrangling toddler socks and cleaning out the fridge and trying to figure out everything we need to do before we go. I will say, I think I'm better prepared for this week than I would have been a few years ago, because I kind of, you know, looked, I knew that this very busy week was coming because I looked ahead in my schedule and so planned for it by, you know, doing some extra tasks over the past couple of weeks, knowing that I really wouldn't have much free time this week.
And that is reality, folks, when we're trying to balance family and work. And by the way, you mentioned making sure you keep track of the socks and also cleaning out the fridge. I just hope you don't find socks in your fridge. I'm sure there's some folks out there who've experienced just that.
I have a 2.5-year-old. You never know where the socks are going to be. So the fridge is as good a place as any to check.
You never know. Exactly. How about you, Grace? Where are you this week from 1 to 10?
Well, first, I just want to say I really like this question, because I think it recognizes that we just move around on this continuum. We're not like, once you figured it out, you're like always a 10, you know, you're just kind of like making things work as you move along. All of that being said, I think I'm actually doing pretty well this week. I'm going to go with a 6. Last week was a little bit hectic because there were some emergency kind of meetings and things that came up that really it displaced my planned out week. And then this week I'm feeling caught up, so I'm feeling pretty good. But I'm always in a little bit of a battle or work in progress to make time and mental space for like exercise and personal reflection. Those are really areas that I'm working on for me. So room for improvement.
And I like it coming in at a 6 out of 10. Well, since you all are sharing, I guess I'll be honest too. I'm going to say I'm about a 7. I usually start the week off feeling like an 8 or a 9, but with the holidays and one kid in cello camp and one kid at Mimi's and working throughout the day too, it's a juggle, isn't it? So I'll settle in with a 7, and I can't wait to learn to hear how you all balance the two. So Grace, tell me about you with the competing demands, just like we talked about, and whether it's vacation or some big project coming up at work, how do you balance between these needs? And where do you even get started to get a handle if you're out of control? What would you tell Claire this week as it's been a struggle?
Well, what I would think about, and I think the best place to start is really figuring out priorities. I think this is really foundational to time management, because, you know, we have the same, everybody has the same amount of time in our day, right? But what is different is that we all have different priorities. And so we make different choices throughout the day. And I think the more clarity you have in your priorities, the easier it is to actually make those choices. And then the less time you spend thinking about like, if you need to do something or when you need to do something, then you can actually do the things that you need to do if you know what those things are. But I think a lot of people, myself included, I get stuck in like, oh, is this what I need to be doing right now? But if I knew what the priority was, then I could actually skip that part and actually execute my tasks. And one of the things that exercises that Claire talks about that I love is the Eisenhower matrix. A matrix or a process that helps you take the laundry list of to-dos and it helps you prioritize. I think to-do lists have become really popular and a lot of people are using them, but you can make a to-do list as long as like, I don't know, the longest piece of paper you can imagine, right? Like you can just keep writing tasks. But if you don't have a sense of their priority, then you can get really, really lost in that.
Oh, so I heard you, the Eisenhower matrix. And I just have this vision in my head of this long rolling piece of paper. I think about the grocery store these days and the long receipt that you get of random grocery items. So the fact that the prioritization matters is so important. That kind of sounds obvious, yet at the same time, how many of us do what you said? Sometimes you just have to stop thinking and swirling and prioritize. You said it. We all have the same amount of time in a day, and then we choose and differentiate what our priorities are. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So, Claire, as we have residents, you just mentioned new residents coming into play, or perhaps these are third-year residents going into practice, and they have an opportunity to start from scratch, let's say. We don't always feel that way, especially if we're faculty or attendings. How do you still preserve your time for personal well-being and restart a rotation? Let's say you got yourself in a hot mess and you have an opportunity to restart. How do you balance it?
Yeah, I think, for residents that kind of change every 4 weeks or, every 6 weeks, depending on how your block schedule works, it can be like a really nice opportunity to reset because you have this kind of like natural change in your schedule. And I think that can be a reminder to kind of like sit down. One of the things that Grace and I do with folks when we're kind of giving our talks on time management is have them do a mind sweep where, we give them like 5 or 10 minutes to generate that super, super long grocery list of just everything that is on their mind that's swirling around in the background and might be like causing anxiety or making them feel like they're overwhelmed with how much stuff is going on, to get it all out on paper. So then they can like have it in front of them and start to do that prioritization and think about like what really needs to be done. So I think the change in block schedule is a nice opportunity to say, okay, it's a new month, it's a new block. Let me do my mind sweep, kind of like get everything out of my head and onto paper so I can think about, when I'm going to get all of that done. I think one of the challenges is that when residents are starting a new schedule, if they've never done that rotation before, then they might not really know what it's actually going to look like, right? Like you might have neuroclinic half day on your schedule and not know, okay, how much stuff can I get done around that half day? Or do I need to really block that whole like 4 or 5 hour chunk that I'm just going to be in neuroclinic, I'm going to be learning and like, I'm not going to leave early and have a little bit of time for extra tasks, or I can't expect that. And that's in contrast to like, I think for faculty, at least for me, I feel like I can, now I know my schedule and I know my different contexts pretty well. So I can gauge relatively well, like how many types of tasks I can get done on a given day. And, what kind of things I should assign to like my admin half day or, my precepting half day, my on-call half day. I don't assign any tasks to my clinic half day because I just know that I'm going to be running around and definitely won't get anything done. So I think my tips for residents who are going into a new block would be to try and do some of that forecasting by, if you can, talk to people who have already done the rotation to get kind of the scoop on what exactly how much time is there really built into the schedule. And do that mind sweep at the beginning so you have an idea of like, okay, what am I trying to get done during this rotation apart from obviously, focusing on learning and the requirements of the rotation? Do you need to plan for your elective in a few months? Do you need to do board prep? And then have your running list of kind of small tasks that you can accomplish in like unexpected pockets of downtime. Let's say like the attending for a specialist clinic is late and you have, 20 minutes where you're kind of sitting there waiting. Well, like have all of those emails that you can do on your phone or like, board review questions that you can pop up on the app so that when you get your real pockets of downtime, like on your weekend day off, then you don't have to do that stuff. And you can focus on whatever it is that helps you recharge and feeds your soul a little bit.
Oh, I'm curious of how many people actually do an intentional mind sweep. It gives me this visual of just sweeping your mind clear, starting over, whether it's by month or by week or by day, particularly for the residents or even medical students, that mind sweep, I would imagine, goes block by block. And doing your homework in advance, talking to those who went before you, you're not the first. And that's a good thing. That is reassuring. And it's the same for new physicians. If there are certain days where you're having office meetings, where everyone needs to be all hands on deck, or as you mentioned, the admin time, that's really smart. And I wonder how many of us finish the weekend feeling like we worked the whole weekend to catch up. And by doing some of this work and this intentional planning and prioritizing, it also helps us preserve that free time so that we don't get frustrated or burned out or or feel somewhat resentful for doing our weekend or pajama time records. I've heard that term used as well. Excellent. Well, so that being said, it's easier perhaps as a faculty member or maybe even as a new physician when you're getting started, but to empower medical students or residents in particular, in this case, how do you ask those questions for that uninterrupted time? How do you set up those boundaries respectfully so, professionally so, because you're not always in control? I remember those days and this is the schedule ahead of you. Any tips, tricks, suggestions you'd give for folks to ask in a respectful way and also be clear of those boundaries while also being responsible?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think all levels, at least just speaking for myself, I think, you know, I still have trouble protecting my time and asking for uninterrupted time. But definitely, yeah, as a medical student and as a resident, that can feel really tough to do. You know, I remember when I was a resident that I would see my program director would have blocks of time on her schedule that were writing time for like 3 or 4 hours. And I always kind of wondered like, huh, I wonder like why, how she knew that she would like want to write on that particular half day or whatever it is. And now I really understand like, oh, she's blocking that time so it doesn't get filled with like other meetings or other tasks or like all of the million things that she needed to do as program director, because she knew that, you know, she needed that uninterrupted time to really get some of these project, you know, things like planning a talk or writing a paper, stuff that she really just needs, you know, a few hours of uninterrupted time to get your brain into that space to work on it. You know, I think there's some things that you can't change to uninterrupted time, like regardless of if you're a resident or a faculty, like I can't cancel my clinic patients or call out of precepting because I need to finish a talk, right? I think for faculty, I can try to, you know, protect a couple hours of my admin time and not give myself other tasks or book other meetings in that time. For residents, I think, yeah, it can be harder to do that because they do have so many clinical responsibilities. But I think when they're, yeah, looking at their schedules and thinking about, okay, maybe I do have this morning, you know, kind of free, or I'm doing care coordination, which is what we call it in our schedules, then think about if, you know, people say, you know, oh, could we meet during that time? How to have some boundaries about like, oh, well, I'm working on putting together my talk during that time, or I'm working on doing this, you know, specific task during that time. So can we meet, you know, here's an alternative time that we could meet. I think it can be really hard. And I also just want to call out that, you know, sometimes there's this other level where you're really struggling to get everything done for your job and your life to the point where you really need to make a structural change. And I don't want to imply that you can organize yourself out of like an impossible job situation or like an episode of depression or something that's going on like that, where like actually what you need is to take a leave or to reduce your FTE. And these organizational tips are great, but yeah, that's like a different level of things.
Definitely. And I like how you frame that out. There are some things we control, other things that we don't control. And serenity tells us the ability to know the difference is out there, but not always clear for all of us. Those critical thinking skills, I think, are really important and something I think is worthwhile pausing on for a moment. You talked about depression, and that's very real. Stress, high-level stress situations, we're typically not our best selves in those particular experiences. And having the level of awareness to realize that, I think, is really important to call out. And that's when it's so critical to perhaps go to 20,000, 30,000 foot view to go, ooh, this is stressful, or I'm having a really hard time finding the balance, or how do I prioritize, knowing that this event or agenda item wasn't on my list before, but now it's been placed on my list. So I think that's important. And one thing I'll just insert into this conversation is when you first start doing this, it might be helpful to see how others do it well and ask those questions. And that's something I find that people who are willing to learn from others and then adapt it to themselves can really take this suggested tip of where do you fit that time in? I think that's really important. So thank you. And this is tough. I think people struggle with time management across the board, whether it's because you have a family or you're trying to balance your personal life with your work life. And sometimes it'll be busier than other times. So Now I'm going to hit on a subject, and I'm just going to use one word, email. Email is something that has crept up. And you, I used to use the indicator of how clean is your car. And there are folks that everything is in place. There's no extra food bags or an extra pair of shoes in the car or clothes that they wore from last week in the car. And then there are folks who have everything in the kitchen sink in their car. Now I find the question I ask folks, and this is for you, Grace, since email is your thing, I think you've got some great tips to give us. Now I ask people, okay, how many emails are in your inbox? Is there a golden rule? Is there a way to manage that? What do you think, Grace?
The dubious title that I have, like I'm the email person. So there's actually a lot of theories about how many emails you should have in your inbox, and like a whole like little subculture of email inbox zero, which I think actually I don't necessarily subscribe to. I think that sets people up for feeling like failures. But what there is some, I think some general tips that I think are really helpful with email. And in previous, our STFM previous time management talk, I talked about like the four D's of email management, which are delete, which is the most fun, defer, delegate, and do. Those are the basics. And I'm not going to go into those here, but I thought it would be interesting to take it at another different angle, because I think a lot of people who struggle with email fall into one of two categories. So kind of like how you were describing, Surya, there's like one group who are people who are just always on email. Like they can't get away from their emails. They're just constantly responding to their emails. Then there's another group of people that I think have the full email boxes that have like thousands of emails in them. People might actually be avoiding their emails. They might even be getting reminders from their colleagues to look at their email or respond to email. So for the first group, the group that is constantly in their email box and just like always responding to things, I want to say actually that that was sort of me as early faculty. I actually took a lot of pride in my ability to respond to email quickly. I felt like it was like my value add as faculty. Like not only could I get you this answer, I'm going to like get it to you really, really quickly before anybody else on this thread. And after a couple of years of doing that, I was like, well, first of all, this is super unhealthy. It is bleeding into like outside work hours, and it's not sustainable. And, it's not actually my highest value add. And so I started to really think more about, okay, when somebody emails you, they want your thoughts or your contributions on some project or matter. And that is your value, is what you think about what's happening, right? You don't have to drop everything to respond right away. And in fact, if you do respond immediately, you might not be giving your fullest reflection or thought on a matter. So for people who might be stuck in this cycle of just like feeling like they have to respond right away to their email, you know, you might think about reframing your mindset around email responses. Like your quickest response might not necessarily be your most valuable response. So then for the other group, the group that just like don't look at their emails and don't respond to their email at all, what I've heard from some people who struggle with this is that they feel really buried in their email and they really don't know where to start. And so I do think the four D's are a good place to start. And I think there are two D's in particular that can get people in really big trouble on email. And that's the defer and delegate D's. That's because the delete D, those were emails that didn't matter anyway. So that's fine. And then the do tasks are often the ones where the person who received the email is the only person that's kind of going to be impacted by that decision. But the defer and delegate tasks are often like bigger projects where a lot of people are involved, or the email recipient is like that response is needed to move a project along. So when you don't respond to that email, the project stalls or people are on hold. And this is when people really notice and are like, what's up? You are not responding to emails. So one strategy that could work if you think this is sounding like you is to come up with a standard response, like a dot phrase, or even on Outlook, there's like a button you can click to say like insert, and it will just plop in a message. And your message could say something like, I can't get to this right now, but I'll respond within a week. Thanks for your patience. And this lets people know that you've like seen the email and that you will get to it eventually. And it can sort of diffuse any tension or expectation around that email. And then what you can do as somebody who's gotten the email is like walk out. And I've talked to like different program directors and different faculty who have been identified as being like good in this email department, that a lot of times they tell me they block out a day or a half day a week to get their email work done. And so then you have this sort of time that you're going to get to these defer or delegate tasks so that you can actually be part of the progress and process of moving things along rather than being the person that like stalls activity out. So those are sort of additional thoughts on email, I guess.
Wow, we could do a whole podcast session on email and unpacking everything that you just said. I'm taking all of these notes. I feel like you called me out, Grace. You know me, you see me, and all of the others. And I'm sure that our listeners have done the same, either recognize themselves in one of your comments or recognize other people that they work with. I'm going to raise my hand. I'm going to admit I got to get it done first. I have to get it out of there. I like having less than 10 emails in my inbox, but I'm really writing down and calling back to myself what you said. Let's make sure that our pride doesn't get in the way of most valued response. And when I say pride, you said sometimes we're proud to be the first to respond when that isn't necessarily your most valued response versus the quickest. And those four D's, I'm going to remember this delete, defer, delegate, and do. And the two biggest D's, defer and delegate. And I could automatically come up with all of these examples of the big picture ones, the ones that you have to pause, you have to think about, or those emails that you start to type, you untype, you restart to type, and then delete. And sometimes we can forget. And I think that's where you alluded to the folks who are perhaps buried in their email or just so overwhelmed at this point. And once you start getting reminders of the reminders of what you forgot or what you didn't respond to, and now you're avoiding, you're right. Those are the ones. I love how you called that out. Those are the ones that are seen by everyone and long-term have the greatest impact because it's the thought process that matters. So doing today's work today is really important, but I'm hearing this call throughout our podcast today, that intentionality that you spoke about right from the get-go and recognizing how we prioritize and perhaps take care of that delete and do right away. Maybe that's prioritizing and then finding a way to name. I love this. I'm going to have to find out how to do this in Microsoft Outlook, that insert phrase. I can't get to this right now, but I'll get back to it. And you gave a date. I like that, in the week. Or I think that timing is really important. Of course, it has to be relevant to the deadline that everyone is working towards. But this matters. I think it also allows us to have more flexibility and fluidity in our responses to make sure they're intentional. And just one more thing I wanted to say about that. I've done this myself where I get ready to type that quick response, and then I untype, and then I retype it, and then I hold it, and then I delete it. And then if I wait till the next day or even to the end of the day, it's amazing how so many problems work themselves out when you leave it alone, right? That's really helped for me. And then I've also learned, being that person who's constantly keeping up with my emails, there is a button on Outlook. Have you seen this before, where you can set the timing instead of going out in the middle of the night when I might be working, or on the weekend, because that's what's convenient for me when I do my processing. But I've learned to set the emails to go out at 8 a.m. on Monday, because I find the more email you send, the more email you receive. Is that something you've experienced?
I was going to bring up that I love doing this work with Grace, because I feel like every time we do another talk or something together, I learn something from her. And a couple iterations ago, then she was talking about emailing on vacation. And I am very guilty of going into my inbox when I'm on vacation and saying, oh, well, I'll just respond to this one real quick. And she brought up exactly what you were saying, Saria, that, you know, the kind of the more emails you send, the more you get. And especially when you're away and then people see that you're responding to emails, then it's easy for them to say like, oh, well, it looks like she's on her email, so I'll ask her another question because I also have this other thing that I want to ask her about. So I've started to try to be really intentional about ideally not looking at my email at all while I'm on vacation. And if I feel like I really have to and want to kind of, you know, prevent the deluge of work on the, you know, the first day that I'm back, especially if I know it's going to be really busy when I get back, then maybe typing up some responses and scheduling them to not send until the first day that I'm actually back at work, to avoid starting letting people know that I'm sending a couple of emails while I'm supposed to be away.
Yeah, that scheduled response empowers us to get it off our plate if it's clouding up our mind, maybe mind sweeping while we're on vacation, clear it out. And then it gives people the opportunity to respond when you get back. I think that's important. But there's something else that you brought up that I thought was very helpful. And I love the volley you have back and forth with Grace. And it sounds like she's your time management peer. So let me ask you this. Do you ever find yourself, and if not, I'm going to ask you, how do you do this? Folks are really struggling with time management, whether it's a resident or a peer. Do you approach people to help them address it or help them recognize where they are? How do you handle that situation where someone's on one end of the spectrum or the other?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's funny, Grace was my like faculty development fellowship director. So I struggle. I definitely think of her as a mentor, but it's been really fun to do this work together for a few years now. I think I try not to give too much unsolicited advice. I think that can be a hard thing when your main job is a teacher that, you know, it feels easy to give people advice all the time. But when I've, you know, we've definitely had residents who struggle with time management. I think that comes up in a lot of, you know, residencies that we're saying, you know, this resident is, they're, you know, super sharp and like passionate, but they just are having trouble getting everything done that needs to get done. And, you know, it's not really, you know, fair or helpful to the resident to say, well, just try harder to get everything done. And so that's when, you know, I have at times said like, hey, if you want to sit down and like talk about kind of your organizational system or, you know, how you are organizing your tasks, how you're thinking about your time management, I'm happy to kind of sit down with you and go through that together and show you, you know, a couple of the things that I do that I find helpful. And I think usually people are into that. And on the kind of reverse side, I think flattery works. And like, if you feel like you're struggling with that, and usually, you know, finding someone who you think is on top of their stuff and saying, hey, looks like you know, kind of have a good system going. Like, do you mind if I pick your brain about that for a few minutes? Most people, I think, would say yes to that. I don't know. What do you think, Grace?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, Saria. And I think it's a little bit of a shame we don't talk about this more proactively. I think that a lot of times time management type stuff comes up when somebody's already like struggling and kind of semi-drowning in these administrative tasks. And then people are like, oh, you need help. But really, we all need help on this. And we could benefit from learning from each other. The other piece of it is that like time management stuff is like so individual. Like I learn so much, like pick up like little tips from Claire and watching other people or listening to a podcast. And you just have to try things on and see if they work. Like I've definitely tried like different tools that I've seen work really well for someone, but it just doesn't fit in with my workflow and it's not helpful. And so it would be great to have a culture where we're talking about this more and learning more from each other. Cause I just think there's so many things that little tips that we could really gain from others if we were in more conversation about this.
Yeah, so true. What works for you may not work for me. And if we develop and instill this culture of learning, then maybe we are more willing to try and try again and see if it works. Or then, you know, we can modify what works for folks. Some people are really good at getting their exercise in, as an example. And I do want to hit on this just a little bit longer, this well-being piece. We know this is a challenge that we have not only in medicine, but I'm seeing it all over the place, and not just with physicians in healthcare, but other team players in this space where we feel like when people tell you, Claire, you said this, work harder. Well, it's just defeating when we say that. I do believe that we all wake up every day in medicine and we feel like we're working pretty darn hard. Working smarter is important, but not just telling people work smarter, because then that can also be frustrating. Of I should just work it out. I should just know how to do this. It's finding, I think, that balance and helping get ourselves out of the ditch from time to time when we're so overwhelmed, restarting. We talked about the mind sweep, talked about the Eisenhower matrix, the 4 D's. These are so very helpful tips. And I really appreciate both of you, Dr. Shi, Dr. Thompson, for spending time with us today. With the collegiality that we hear today is something that we need to continue to talk about. And medicine is important. And we should also talk about how we do it, how we get it all done, because no one is doing it perfectly, I would challenge us. And we can always improve in our balance at the same time as we can improve in our skill set or proficiencies. So that being said, any final tips for our listeners today? Anything we haven't talked about that we could add on? Maybe where we got it wrong and figured out how to get it right?
I will say, well, Grace usually goes over this one concept that I think has been fun and important for a lot of folks, is eating the frog. And that's been really helpful for me too, as I've thought about, you know, trying to get, like, when I have a task, especially that feels really overwhelming, or that I know, like, I would rather do all of my other little 2-minute emails than like get started on this one thing that I have to do. Having that be actually the first thing that you do in your day. So just tackle that really hard thing right away. So that when you have the most energy and can kind of get through it. And Grace, what's the quote about?
Yeah, it's from Mark Twain. And it's like, if you eat a frog at the beginning of the day, you can be pretty sure that that's the worst thing that's going to happen to you that day. So you just like eat your frog immediately, do that task that you've been procrastinating, and just get that done. And then you can actually feel like you've accomplished a lot that day.
So I love that one. And I think, yeah, just in general, that's exactly what we were kind of saying here near the end, that there's no like one app or system or book that's like going to make everyone's life like super organized and perfect, right? And I think approaching this just with humility, and that like you're probably going to have to change your system a bunch of times, and yeah, pick up different pieces from different people to figure out what works for you as your life changes and your career changes. And so to always, yeah, be in that learning space about it, and there's no one quick fix for it.
And Mark Twain has the final words of the day: eat the dadgum frog. Through his wisdom and his humor and truth, I think this is so important. When it's done, it's done. And you know, you have the rest of your day to focus on the other things to do. Dr. Thompson, Dr. Shi, this has been such a worthwhile time spent together, learning from you, taking lots of notes. And I know that our listeners pulled a whole lot of pearls and nuggets out of this conversation today. So folks, I hope you take these learning lessons with you, and that you eat the frog and you do your 4Ds and focus on when you need to, starting over by prioritizing what matters. Thank you. Thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed this session.
Thank you, Saria.
Yeah, thanks so much for having us.
You've been listening to the SDFM podcast, produced by the Society of Teachers of Family Medicine. Visit us at sdfm.org and follow us on Twitter at sdfm_FM. This podcast is copyright Society of Teachers of Family Medicine 2023.